So let's look then at what the process of fully expressing our anger actually requires in concrete form. The first step is to stop and do nothing. Just take a breath. We refrain from making any move to blame or punish the other person. We simply stay quiet. Then we identify the thoughts that are making us angry. For example, we overhear a statement that leads us to believe that we've been excluded from a conversation because of race. We sense anger, stop, and recognize the thoughts stirring in our head. We see that we're saying, "It's unfair to act like that. She's being racist." And we know that all such judgments like this are tragic expressions of our needs. So we take the next step and connect to the needs behind those judgments. If I judge someone to be racist, the need might be for inclusion, equality, respect, connection. To fully express ourselves, we now open our mouths. But what comes out is not the anger and the judgments that cause the anger. Now we're connected to life. What comes out is what needs of ours have not been met. And anger is no longer the feeling, because when we're connected to our needs, we feel other feelings than anger. We might feel frustrated, powerless, sad, but never angry. To articulate these feelings, however, may require a lot of courage. For me, it's easy to get angry and tell people that was a racist thing to do. In fact, I may even enjoy saying such things, but to get down to the deeper feelings and needs behind such a statement may be very frightening. So to fully express what's going on in us, we don't stop at the anger and express that or express the judgments that we have. To fully express ourselves, we might say, "When you entered the room and started talking to the others and didn't talk to me, and then you made the comment about white people that you did, I felt really hurt and sad. I also got scared. It triggered off my need to be treated equally. I'd like you to tell me how you feel when I tell you this." When I come out of that kind of energy, the energy of being in touch with my feelings and needs, the other person and I are both more likely to get our needs met than if I react out of the energy coming from my judgments. In many cases, however, another step needs to take place before we can expect the other person to connect with what's going on in us. Because it will often be difficult for others to receive our feelings and need in such situations, we often need to first empathize with them if we want them to hear us. The more we empathize with what leads others to behave in ways that are not meeting our needs, the more likely it is that they'll be able to reciprocate afterwards. Over the last 30 years, I've had a wealth of experience sharing nonviolent communication with people who harbor strong beliefs about specific races and ethnic groups. Early one morning, I was picked up by a cab at an airport to take me into town. A message from the dispatcher came over the loudspeaker for the cabbie. The message was, "Pick up Mr. Fishman at the synagogue on Main Street." There was another man sharing the cab with me, and he muttered, "These kikes get up early in the morning so they can screw everybody out of their money." For 20 seconds, there was smoke coming out of my ears. In earlier years, my first reaction would have been to want to physically hurt such a person. Now I took a few deep breaths, gave myself some empathy for the hurt, fear, and rage that were stirring inside of me. I listened to the feelings, but then I stayed conscious that my anger wasn't coming from what my fellow passenger nor the statement he had just made. Rather, I realized his comment had triggered off a volcano inside of me. I could see that my anger came from a deeper source than the judgment that made me angry. I sat back and simply allowed the violent thoughts to play themselves out. Giving myself this empathy enabled me then to focus my attention on the humanness behind his message. I wanted to see the beauty in him, to understand what was alive in him when he made that remark. I also wanted him to understand me and the pain that I felt, and I trusted that he would be better able to do that if he felt that I empathically connected with what was going on in him when he said what he did. I said, "Are you feeling frustrated because you have some needs that haven't been met when you've dealt with money with Jewish people?" He thought about that for a moment and said, "Yeah, these people are disgusting. They'll do anything for money." So I said, "If I'm understanding you, then you feel distrust and the need to protect yourself when you're involved in financial affairs with them." "That's right," he said. And he continued to release more judgments as I listened for the feeling and need behind each one. When we settle our attention on other people's feelings and needs, we experience our common humanity. When I hear that he's scared and wants to protect himself, I recognize that I have the need to protect myself at times. I know what it's like to be scared. So when my consciousness is focused on another person's feelings and needs, I see the universality of our experience. I had a major conflict with what went on in his head, of course. But I've learned that I enjoy human beings more if I don't get caught up in what they think in such situations. With people who are thinking in the way that he was, I've learned to savor life much more by only hearing what's going on in their hearts and not getting caught up with what's in their head. This man kept on pouring out his sadness and frustration. Before I knew it, he'd finished talking about Jews and moved on to people of color. He was charged with pain around a number of subjects. After nearly 10 minutes of my just listening, he stopped. He felt understood. Then I let him know what was going on in me. I said to him, "You know, when you first started to talk, I felt a lot of frustration and sadness and discouragement because I've had very different experiences with Jewish people than you've had, and I was wanting to share that I've had such different experiences. Can you tell me what you hear me saying right now?" And the man stopped for a moment and said, I'm not saying they're all..." I said, "Hold it, excuse me. Can you just tell me what you heard me say?" The man says, "What are you talking about?" I said, "It's really important to me. I'd like you to really hear it, so I'd like to repeat it. I really want you just to hear the pain I felt when I heard your words. It's really important to me that you hear that. I was saying I felt a real sense of sadness because my experiences with Jewish people have been very different. I was just wishing that you had had some experiences that were different from the ones you were describing. Can you tell me what you heard me say?" The man said, "You're saying I have no right to talk the way I did." I say, "Thanks for telling me that's what you heard. I can see I didn't make myself clear." "No, I'm not saying you had no right to talk that way. I was trying to say I'd like you to hear me differently than that. I don't want to blame you. I have no desire to blame you." I slowed down the conversation because, in my experience, to whatever degree people hear blame, they have failed to hear our pain. If this man said, in quotes, "Those were terrible things for me to say. Those were racist remarks I said," he would not have heard my pain. He would have heard blame and agreed with it. So as soon as people think they have done something wrong, they will not be fully apprehending our pain. I didn't want him to hear blame because I wanted him to know what was going on in my heart when he said what he did. Blaming is easy. People are used to hearing blame. Sometimes they agree with it and hate themselves. That doesn't stop them from behaving the same way. And sometimes they hate us for calling them whatever we did, which also doesn't stop their behavior. If we sense blame entering our mind, as I did in the cab, we may need to slow down, go back, and hear their pain for a while more. I tried again to express my pain, and I could see that I maybe was expressing it in a more complicated way than I had to, so I tried to make it as simple as I could, and he was then able to reflect back what he heard me say. And as I got out of the cab, I thought we had made a superficial connection, but one that was far better than would have come about if I had started to communicate with him out of anger and the judgments that were causing my anger. Probably the most important part of learning how to live the process I have just been discussing about anger is to take our time. We may feel awkward deviating from the habitual behaviors that our conditioning has rendered automatic. But if our intention is to consciously live life in harmony with our values, then we'll want to take our time. A friend of mine jotted down the basic components of this process on a 3x5 card, which he would use as a kind of a cheat sheet at work. When his boss would confront him, he would stop, refer to the card in his hand, and take time to remember how to respond. When he told me this, I asked him whether his colleagues were finding him a little strange, constantly staring into his hand and taking so much time to respond. He said, "Marshall, it doesn't actually take that much more time, but even if it did, it's still worth it to me. It's important for me to know that I'm responding to people the way I want to, rather than how I've been trained to." At home, he was even more overt. He explained to his wife and children why he was taking the time and why he consulted the card. Whenever there was an argument in the family, he would pull out the card and take his time, focus his attention where he wanted it to be, using the card as a reminder. He told me that after about a month, he felt comfortable enough with the process to not have to use the card, and he put it in his drawer. And one evening shortly afterwards, he and his son Scotty, age 4, were having a conflict over the television, and it wasn't going too well, and Scotty said, "Daddy, get the card." For those of you wishing to live nonviolent communication, especially in challenging situations that stimulate anger, I would suggest the following exercise. As we've seen, our anger comes from judgments, labels, and thoughts of blame of what people should do and what they deserve. List the judgments that float most frequently in your head by using the cue, "I don't like people who are," and then list what thoughts come to you. Collect these negative judgments in your head, and for each one, then ask, "When I make that judgment of a person, what might I be needing at that moment that's being expressed through that judgment?" In this way, you train yourself to frame your thinking in terms of unmet needs rather than in terms of judgments. Practice is essential because most of us were raised, if not in the streets of Detroit as I was, then somewhere only slightly less violent. Judging and blaming may have become second nature to us. So to practice nonviolent communication, we need to proceed slowly, to take our time before we speak, and often to take a breath and not speak at all. Learning the process and applying it both take some time.